Blog Talk Radio. Well, good evening. Welcome to our show.
It is Tuesday night, July 21st, 2020, and you're listening to Tanya Talks, where your voice is heard and your story is told on Marty Oakley's TS Radio Network and Stephen Burke's 89.9 KLRB FM, KLRB FM, Lighthouse Christian Radio out of Oklahoma. We have got quite a show. Of course, we've got quite a show for you. And I'm very pleased. It's just bittersweet. I'm just so happy to have people that are standing up for making what's wrong right. And let me tell you, we've got far too much going on over there in certain parts of Oklahoma, and in particular, we're talking about Lawton, Oklahoma. We've had a number of guests on the show that have legitimate complaints about public corruption, malfeasance. When something is wrong, people usually like to make it right because their name is attached to it. It's part of who they are, you know, how you bring yourself forward in this world, either privately or professionally. I tend to believe that most people that are privately held to a high regard or hold themselves accountable and are people of integrity, that they will be that way both professionally and personally. Unfortunately, there is too much public corruption in Oklahoma, where they have just run amok and people have each other's backs that are doing that, and the same names keep on coming up over and over and over again. And, you know, the constitutional right of due process has been trampled all over. Well, how can they do that? How can they do that? No, it's unbelievable. How often do you hear people say, no way, that couldn't happen, because they can't. They can't do that. That's illegal. No, they can't. They can't. Well, that's true, but it's not true. They're not allowed to, but they do it anyway. So then they're allowed to. So if something's gone wrong, you know, people do like to make it right if they are people of good integrity, people that follow a particular moral character and believes in, you know, doing to others as you would like them to do unto you. And as far as within their professional positions, their canons, their promises, their oath, their everything that they're supposed to follow, dependent on their role in the public, depending on their role in that public position, if they're not holding themselves and their peers to that high bar that is supposed to be the standard to hold those positions, then yes, they can do it. And they are doing it. But we don't have to let them keep on doing it. My name is Tanya Hathaway, and I am your host. I want to thank my mother as always, for listening in and giving just such tremendous support to the cause. And before we get on to the show, I would like to give some good news. And this will let your listeners know that as you continue to be faithful to your advocacy, taking the time to care about what's happening out there, or at least having an open mind and listening or asking more questions or sending letters and emails and making phone calls on behalf of the people that you have determined have been wronged, that it's not in vain. It's not in vain. Today, another tremendous victory came through, and I wish I could give you the details on it now, but it is another tremendous victory. A man who's been on our show several times, spoke at our rally, so we're up to a few people at the rally who have succeeded, and we're doing this again. And so you cannot give up. You cannot give up. When everything is sealed and signed with this victory, this person will come on again. And it won't be the last time that you'll hear from him. Very active, calm, peaceful, succinct, and put up with tremendous abuse. But that's not unfamiliar. It's not unfamiliar, as you know. So hopefully that can give other people hope that what you're doing to stand by others and care about their lives, literally their lives and their livelihood, it's not in vain. And I am personally grateful that you take the time and take this show and, more importantly, the guests that come on it that have been well vetted. Seriously. Neither Marty Oakley, Stephen Burke, or myself are attorneys and cannot give any kind of legal advice. So we hold ourselves harmless of any error of content. But that being said, just as I had shared, these guests and these cases are thoroughly vetted with whatever information can be gathered before they are brought to you. And you can contact me at injusticeinoklahoma@gmail.com. We're not that fancy, but doggone, we are serious. injusticeinoklahoma@gmail.com. So if you feel that there is any error of content and you would like to correct that, or you have a comment, you are more than welcome to send me that information. If I have found that I was incorrect with any content, I'm the first one to bring that forward and make it right. Just imagine this. Just imagine this. I'm going to take you somewhere. Not where it began, but there was a trial. There was a murder trial. The mother of the murdered child, 17 years old. He was just 17 years old. Was in court. And this is back in September of 2000, or actually, no, they were in court in 2002, forgive me. The who had been named to be the perpetrator of the crime was on trial save his life, to his freedom, to stand up after he had been offered a 3-year plea deal if he said he was guilty. He refused to say he was guilty. He was given life with the possibility of parole. The mother of this other 17-year-old young man
was present in court as well.
After the verdict and the sentencing was brought forward, handed down, the mother of the young man that was actually murdered went over to the mother of the young man that was found guilty and sentenced to life with a possibility of parole. The young man that was murdered, and I'm sharing this with you because I think it's important to share it with you, especially given the environment that most recently, especially, we are in. The convicted for life 17-year-old, it's a black young man. The mother of Justin, who was murdered, went over to the mother of Stanley, who's now facing life. He's in for life with a possibility of parole. And she hugged Mrs. Watson, Stanley Watson's mother. She hugged her and said, "We've both lost, haven't we? We both lost." They say there's access to justice when you walk through those doors. Those two mothers that day knew that wasn't the case. As in many cases throughout Oklahoma, but we're focusing on Lawton right now, there have been similar alleged, I have to say, to protect myself, alleged public corruption and malfeasance. And I 100% believe everything that I have seen and heard. We had Breon on behalf of Free Mike Gaines not that long ago. Brought an awful lot of attention. Why? Because these are people that are standing up for what's right and fighting the malfeasance and the corruption when most people, and I'm not putting those people down, are scared to death and don't actually stand up. Since then, we've had other people come forward, including Justice for Stanley. And I'm hearing some of the same names over and over and over again. There are patterns of malfeasance. And it's time, and I do believe that we have enough information, proof of denial of due process, to go forward with something much bigger than just a radio show. And I'm not trying to put down this forum, because this is where your voice is heard and your story is told, where so many others will just snuff it out. I've just been corrected. The date that he went into prison was 2001. Thank you. So I'd like to introduce to you the mother of Stanley Watson, and that's Janet Watson. Ms. Janet, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you.
Greatly appreciate you being on with us tonight. We've had some talks that are very that have been very serious and very telling, and as well I have gone through the docket with a fine-tooth comb, and unfortunately there's not a lot to see other than certain things are very good to see. But there's no PDFs that we can open up. There's none of that. But you can see a couple things. Number one, I don't see where Ken Sue Dorsey, who has come up in these cases in Lawton. And as a matter of fact, Ken Sue Dorsey was involved in the very first case that I ever did on radio. She was an attorney, still is an attorney, and a really, really questionable attorney that keeps on popping up. She just keeps on popping up. And she is paid to not only either frame somebody, it appears, or to get somebody else off and make sure that somebody else satisfies the needs of that prosecutor, to get somebody out there that's going to take the hit.
Yes. And I would like to correct you. The victim's name was Austin.
Austin.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you. And I did ask you to correct me if I'm doing anything. You know, I'd rather correct now than later if I get something wrong. So I appreciate that. We also have the wife of Stanley Watson on with us. And I'd like to introduce to you Jennifer. Jennifer Watson.
Hello.
How are you tonight?
I'm doing fine.
All right. Well, thank you so much for everything that you're doing, everything that you've done, and everything that you continue to do to fight for what is right. And not only can we hope and pray that your son and your husband will ultimately have justice served, but as well that others will be relieved from these tyrants. Just have each other's backs, but not yours and yours and yours and yours out there who are listening. They have each other's backs, not caring about the outcome when they know that they have suppressed evidence. When they know that there's not one shred of DNA evidence, not one shred of DNA evidence, and not only that, not one person has come forward and said he did it.
Exactly.
Not one person. Unfortunately, this young man died, and it's possible that he wouldn't have. He was stabbed with a knife. This young man was approximately six tall, the man who was murdered. Stanley Watson, 5'3". The medical examiner testified under oath, mind you, that it is an impossibility that Stanley Watson could have done this, given the fact that Stanley is right-handed. The height of the injury to his backside, it was in his upper left shoulder. Given the fact of the man that is now serving life is 5'3", and he's right-handed. The medical examiner testified to that. Not one shred of DNA evidence. This young man had the police not blocked off the road, might have lived if the police let his friends take him to the hospital. They were trying to resuscitate him. Mrs. Hatcher, the mother of the victim, sued the police and won. There was a woman there, a police officer, who went through a vehicle and happened to find a knife in one of the original defendant's vehicles. She found the knife, put it back in. Apparently she had said that it was a little bit sticky. Oh, she didn't think anything of it. And put that knife back in the glove compartment where she found it. So we have nobody claiming that Stanley did this. We have not one shred of DNA evidence. And we have witnesses that were called by the prosecution after they were threatened, and we will get into this more detail with Janet and with Jennifer, after they were threatened to testify a particular way, that claimed that they were being threatened to say something that wasn't true. That's all we got. That's all we've got. And yet Stanley Watson, just like Michael Gaines, remains behind bars for something that it sure seems they didn't do. Why don't you roll us back, Janet, to what happened, what the event was, where people were, and let's just start there. Let our listeners know.
Okay, the night of the incident.
Yes, please.
It had taken place on Flower Mound Road out there. It's like a little area where all the young teenagers go and have bonfires and party after homecoming and stuff. And Austin Hatcher, which is the victim, he was out there. And my son was out there with his friends. Austin was out there with his friends. And for some reason, an altercation broke out between Alonzo Horn and Austin Hatcher. And in the midst of that altercation, there was a lot of kids fighting. You know, there was a lot. He ended up getting injured, and from his injury, he passed away. But it was so dark out there that no one actually knew what happened, or how, because there was so many boys out there fighting. There was so many. Which was that night, later on that night, I was called and told that my son, Stanley, was at the police department. A police officer came to my house and picked me up and said they needed me to be there before they questioned him because he was a minor.
And it started outright by
questioning. Because when we got there and they were questioning him, initially they said the suspect was Alonzo Horn. My son was just being questioned at the time. But as the detective continued to question my son, it kind of went left to me, and I felt like she was accusing him. And so I asked her, I was like, are y'all charging him or accusing him? And she said, yes. And so I said, well, he needs a lawyer, you know. And
mm-hmm.
So it went from there, and next thing you know, we were in court. And as we
next
got
thing
to
you
court,
know, you were in court. No,
well, we got him a court-appointed attorney, which was Donald, what's his name? Gutteridge, Don Gutteridge.
Mm-hmm. Don Gutteridge,
attorney.
Right?
Yes, that was his court-appointed attorney. And him and his detective, which was Scott Rice, came and sit down and talked to us and everything because they were representing Stanley, his case. So They came and talked to us. They questioned other witnesses and everything. And, oh, this is a long story. And so
it's,
then.
It's a lot.
Next thing, it's a lot. It's a lot. You know, and I was trying to,
okay.
like.
So originally.
Going through a lot.
There were several people that were charged.
Question.
With this crime.
Mm-hmm. There were several people. Yes, were charged. Stanley wasn't charged
okay,
at first. He was just. Yeah.
I'm sorry?
Stanley wasn't initially being charged. He was supposed to be questioned, and then he got charged. When I asked for a lawyer, then they said he was being charged.
Okay. So along with, and I'm pulling up my notes here. So along with Stanley, we had, let me get back to my notes. We had who else was charged? We had, Alonzo Horn.
Yes.
Correct? Alonzo
yes.
Horn was originally charged, but suddenly he shows up as a material witness. And this is the person whose vehicle the knife was found in.
Yes.
This also is a person who is represented by Kensu Dorsey.
Yes.
So, you know what? It's a job of a defense attorney to do your best, to do your absolute best, defend your client, all right?
Yes.
Go for it. Do it. Especially, I mean, just do it. It's your job, guilty or not, right? It's your job. And
yes.
there's you know, the confidences, of course, that are between the attorney and the client, the privileges. That's fine. But to also, in my opinion, because of all these cases that I have learned of that she is involved in, have predetermined, in my opinion, outcomes with the prosecutor, with the judge, potentially, in place, and there's no shred of evidence anywhere that points to your son. Kensu Dorsey,
no,
she just keeps on showing up.
Yeah. She was the attorney for, Alonzo Horn.
So it was Alonzo Horn. Alonzo Horn was a material witness. We also have Simeon Shaw. Okay, so well, first of
yes.
all, let's go down the line a little bit. Alonzo Horn was considered a material witness. Janet, you're there too. So I also want to let our listeners know that Janet had actually showed up at the party that night. At the time, they
no,
were not
Jennifer.
Married.
Jennifer. Tell me. That's
Jennifer.
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 That's Jennifer.
Jennifer.
Yeah.
Stanley's wife. So she showed up, but she wasn't allowed in because there were too many people there.
The sheriff
so
turned you
they
around.
They turned you around, right?
Yes, ma'am. The sheriff did.
Right. The sheriff did. Okay, so Stanley and you were just friends at that point, and he had actually shown up at your house earlier that night, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. All right. So, all right. All these years later, you wind up being married because you know this man's heart and you know this man's innocence and realize that you were meant to be together.
Yes. And initially, Alonzo Horn, he wasn't a mature witness. He was a suspect. Stanley
right.
was a mature that, witness, yeah, from the beginning.
Okay. So
when
he
they
was
first
the first
questioning.
Suspect.
Yes, he
so
was the first
did,
suspect.
So what did he – okay, and that would make sense. I mean, it makes sense, but it doesn't, because if that police officer saw the knife and just put it back, and didn't turn it in, didn't put it in a little plastic baggie and preserve it, you know, then it doesn't make sense. Then you would think that even if he was guilty, right, if he's guilty
yes.
of murdering this young man, that
that would have been possibly acquitted because of the fact that there was no preservation of a weapon that was probably in their hand,
yes.
And she put it back.
Yes, she did.
So Ken Sue Dorsey represented Alonzo Horn, who had a knife in his glove compartment, and it was put back.
Yes.
When he was a material witness, a so-called material witness, did he wind up taking the stand?
Yes, he took the stand.
Okay. And so he was called on by the prosecution. How did that go?
He was actually, when he got on the stand, he kept changing his story, saying, and he was looking at his attorney, which was Ken Sue, and whenever the DA would ask him a question, he would look at her, and she would either nod yes or no for him to say yes or no, or kind of like, you know, tell him pretty much what to say. And
you were there.
Yes, I was there throughout the whole time. My son. Of course, I would be there.
Of course. And I'm not.
Yeah,
you know, I want to make that clear.
Yes, I was there for every minute of it. And he would say one statement, and as far as Stanley stabbed him, then he would come back and say he didn't see it, so he wasn't sure. But he just kept flip flopping on his statement and. Pretty much Ken Sue was like kind of coaching him through it from the side.
Okay, so he did say Stanley did it, and then he would redact. Okay, so we're correct.
And say that he didn't, because when the DA asked him, did he see it, he said, no, he didn't see it. And
he said,
you see him with a knife? He said, no, yes. He said, did you see him with a knife? He said, no.
Okay. So is it fair to say that he took back his initial statement and that, okay. All right.
And then he stated that he was scared and he was saying what he was told to say because he had a scholarship on the line and he didn't want to lose his scholarship.
So he had a football scholarship. Is that correct?
A football scholarship, yes.
Okay. And he wound up not. That the football scholarship wound up being revoked.
He lost it anyway. Yeah, he lost it anyway.
Okay. All right. So, where is Alonzo now that you know of?
I think he's incarcerated, last I heard. And let me clarify something. He didn't actually say he saw him stab him, but he said he saw him run up behind him and punch him, like, punch something like when you hit somebody.
Okay.
That's what he said he saw. Let me clarify what
did
I said.
Did he say that he saw the knife?
Yeah, he never said he saw a knife. He said he never saw anybody with a knife.
Okay. Now, were Alonzo and Stanley friends?
Yeah. I think they were acquaintances. I don't know if they really hung together, but I knew
they knew each other.
Knew each other. Yes.
Okay. Okay. And now he is allegedly he is incarcerated in Texas, correct?
I don't think it's in Oklahoma. As far as I know, he's incarcerated in Oklahoma.
He's
not in Lawton. I think it's like by Oklahoma. Yes, I think he's incarcerated in Oklahoma. He was. I'm not sure if he's still in prison, but he was.
Okay. Well, I can do a quick look up while we are on the phone because time got away from me today.
I believe he's at home now.
You believe he's
I'm sorry. Is he released now?
Yeah, he's released now. I believe he was incarcerated before.
Yeah, I know
okay.
He was incarcerated before.
Okay, and was that for? Are you aware of if that was for violent crime?
Yes, I believe. From what I heard, it was for violent crime. He was involved in a violent crime.
Okay, so I'm going to do a little look up while we're talking. Just check on that, see if it shows up.
Yeah, that's right. Allegedly.
Okay,
I'm not sure.
And then the next so-called material witness is Simeon Shaw. Let's talk a little bit about
Simeon Shaw. Now, this witness was called by the prosecution as well, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Then let's talk a little bit about Simeon Shaw's testimony.
He never appeared.
Who also was charged originally, correct?
Yes. Yes.
So everybody that shows up on this docket as a material witness for the prosecution was originally charged for the crime along with Stanley.
Yes.
Okay.
But Simeon never showed up. He ran from day one. He never showed up.
He ran from day one.
Yes,
so
he disappeared.
Okay. So they never found him?
Well, I think they found him. They just never brought him back to testify. He left the state of Oklahoma.
And he moved to Texas. That's okay.
Mm-hmm.
So he moved to Texas, and his family had money, I believe you had said?
Yes. Yes, his family has money. His mother does.
So somehow they didn't find it worth having him extradited or going to look for him, and probably because they knew that, you know, he didn't do it anyways. Well, geez, shouldn't everybody just run away, right, when it comes to Lawton, right?
Yes, right.
Okay. So, all right. So he never showed up. Never showed up. Now, let's see. Who is the next? Let me see.
Myron Wells was the next.
And we've got Myron Wells. Let's talk about Myron Wells, who was originally charged as well. Now, what were the charges when they had, you know, four or five people charged for one stab in the back, right? Was it one?
Yes. Yeah. No, he had multiple stab wounds.
Okay, he wound up with multiple.
I believe it was like maybe 10 to 12 or less, but he had multiple stab wounds, yeah.
Right, right. Okay, and did the medical examiner, let's just clarify this now, did the medical examiner say that it was with the same knife?
I can't remember exactly if he said that or not, but he did say that there was multiple stab wounds.
Okay.
And he did say that if the person that stabbed him had to be either his height from the front and had him in a bear hug and stabbed him, or you had to be a left-handed person if you stabbed him coming from the back. And Stanley is neither. He's right-handed, and he's not even close to Austin Hatcher's height.
And I want to say this. I believe it was actually six wounds.
Was it six stab wounds? Yeah.
Yes.
I knew it was multiple times.
Okay. All right. And you can't remember if the medical examiner said it was one knife or not.
Yes, he said it was one knife. It was one knife.
Okay,
not
that's what I'm
knives.
Trying to get at. Okay.
Yeah,
there's only one knife.
All the stab wounds from the same knife.
Stab wounds. And we also
do
have somebody from the Innocence Project in waiting with us. Let me see. I believe it's Cheryl. Cheryl, are you there?
I am, yes.
Hi, Cheryl. Thank you so much for calling in and for taking an interest in this cases as well. I know that how Cheryl and I met was she's been listening to the shows, or she was listening in, I believe, on maybe it was Perry Lott Perry Lott show, where he was finally released and after he was found to be wrongfully convicted. But of course,
he's still on parole the rest of his life until they find out who really did it. How does that make sense? That's what I want to know. But Cheryl has made herself available, you know, when she can, to opine on these matters. And I am aware that that this case has drawn attention from the Innocence Project. So thank you for calling in. And what are your thoughts on this, on this case?
Well, I can tell you that Stanley's case is an active case.
And I didn't give your last name because I don't know if you want your last name given. Forgive me for interrupting.
Yeah, no, Cheryl's fine.
Okay.
anyway, Stanley's case is an active case, and it has actually been assigned to one of our students. There's been a lot of work done on it, and we are currently, this student was so interested in the case, she has graduated this last May, or in May, and she's getting ready to take the bar in a couple of weeks, and mm-hmm. she wants to continue working on Stanley's case. She actually lives in Lawton.
And she has personal interest.
Yeah, she does. And she has a lot of connections there. And she was former military. And so she really has put a lot of time and effort into this case, investigating, following up on any lead we have. And I'm not sure if you know how our process works, but we are a little barred by certain things that happen. Anything that was in the direct appeal or a post-conviction application, we can't bring up. We have to have brand new evidence.
Right.
So I will just say that Stanley's case is a priority for us, and so we'll continue to work on it until we find the evidence we need.
So, Cheryl, can I ask you, given the belief that evidence was, well, I suppressed or not taken, the failure by the police, and the fact that there's not one shred of DNA and not one witness, from my understanding, that actually claimed to have seen him do this. And this was a party. It was a dark, dark night, from what I understand. It's very dark there. But there's not one person who actually stood by and said that he did this. So, in these cases where, you know, you're supposed to be, you know, beyond a shadow of a doubt. And there was a whole bunch of shadows there that night. And that's just about all there was a whole bunch of shadows. It's my understanding. And then, you know, years later,
Hello? I'm still here. This is Janet.
Did I lose you?
I think we lost her.
Cheryl? Okay. Well, Cheryl, please do call back in. If you can hear us, you might have. Yeah, it wouldn't be the first time that we've lost somebody. But, So the Innocence Project, they're absolutely inundated with cases like these. And so they do take the cases where it's a life sentence because they're just, you know, if they were to take every case that came along with them, then they would they'd just be even more overwhelmed. So let's go back to where we were, and hopefully Cheryl can give us a call back. So Simoneau didn't show up. Then we've got, of course, the plaintiff is the state here. Okay, so who else was a material witness? We've got Wells Myron. Wells Myron.
Yes, Myron Wells.
Myron Wells.
His first
he
name
was
is
another
Myron.
Material
yes.
witness that was also charged with a crime at first. So we had one, two, three, four young men were charged for the murder of 17-year-old Austin Hatcher. Four were charged. One knife. How did things go with Myron?
Once he got on the stand, he would not lie for the DA, and he stated that I'm not going to sit up here and lie and say what the DA want me to say. He said that Stanley didn't do it. Stanley never had a knife, and so the DA just went ahead and dismissed him off the stand.
Okay. So he wasn't doing a good job for the prosecutor, was he?
Yeah, he wouldn't say what they wanted him to say, so they took him off the stand real quick.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So there was one other person that was she charged?
No, she wasn't charged. Yeah, I don't think she was charged at all. Yeah, she was just a material witness. Yeah, I don't think she was charged.
And her name is, and by the way, to our listeners, she does not show up on the court docket as a material witness, okay? However, this young woman has said that she is willing to speak up about what happened and what the prosecutor was asking. Well, it was beyond asking, threatening for her to do. So we're going to find out now. This young lady and her name and what she was threatened to do. All right. Do you want to give her name and did she show up at court?
Yes, her name was Sachiko Glasser, and she did show up at court. And she stated that the DA wanted her to lie or they were threatening to take her child, which she had just had a little girl. And she wouldn't lie, but that's what they were threatening her to do.
So she took a stand. She was on the stand. She, you know, she was under oath, and she doesn't show up as a material witness after the fact. And she was actually called.
Yes.
And so she refused to please the prosecutor, and she was threatened that if she didn't go along with the prosecutor, that they were going to take her young child away.
Yes.
Okay. So we've got Don Gutteridge is a public defender for your son now. And we've got...
Yes, he was.
And then we've got, for the prosecutor's office, Robert Schulte. Robert Schulte.
Yes.
And who was the judge throughout this trial?
Judge Smith.
Judge Smith. Is that Mark Smith?
Mm-hmm. Yes,
ma'am.
Mark Smith.
And what a coincidence. This is the same judge who was on the bench for Mike Gaines' case.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Yeah. Yep. So we've got, I believe, the same prosecutor. I'm not 100% sure of that one. We've got the same judge for Mike Gaines' case. And we have got Ken Sue Dorsey, who keeps showing up. She just keeps showing up. And I'll have to pull up the archive of the very first show that I did that involved her mother and two others, where Kenzie Dorsey was actually representing this young lady and did what she scared them to death, and her mother encouraged her daughter to take the plea deal even though she was pretty well set up. And she did. And guess what? Lo and behold, the plea deal wasn't what she had said it would be. The mother was not allowed in the courtroom. Now, why is that? Why would a mother not be allowed in the courtroom? Now, the daughter is an adult, but since when is a court closed off? Unless it is a very, very volatile situation, and the reason that it would be closed off would be for the best interest of the public. Her mother was not allowed in.
Wow.
And she kept on getting set up. Ken Sue Dorsey never had a contract. That's something about Oklahoma people is attorneys are not held to the standard where you have to have a contract. So, you know, I'm a handshake person, but don't you ever be a handshake person if you're in a legal situation, and especially
exactly.
in Oklahoma. I mean, there's some very, very good lawyers out there. There's some good judges. There's some good prosecutors. There's some good public defenders. But this is the problem. The people that are overseeing the bad ones aren't doing anything about it. You go up the line, there are complaints made to the Attorney General's office, and he just seems to do nothing. So a lot of this that's going on wouldn't be going on if people were actually doing their jobs.
Exactly.
If people are not doing their jobs, the overseers, and if it's for a prosecutor, there's an overseer. Guess who that is? That's the Attorney General's office. Okay? The Attorney General is the highest person in that state, in any state, that is there to oversee the prosecutors, the courts. Unfortunately, even though there are some good attorneys out there, we've got the Bar Association where there is a conflict of interest. That conflict of interest is it is the fox guarding the hen house. And the same thing with the Judicial Oversight Committee. Problem is, it's the fox guarding the hen house. Now, let me ask you, who is it that the prosecutor, the public defender, and the judge gets paid by? Gee, I would say the same person. I would say that that's a conflict of interest, and yet there is a conflict of interest all over the country, and it is incestuous in Oklahoma in many courthouses. So let's talk a little bit more. It all boiled down to you don't know why these other three were actually released from the charges. We know one ran off.
Yes. Yes, one ran off.
I would say it's because somehow the prosecutor thought they could flip them into state witnesses. But, you know?
Yeah.
That's... because prosecutors have pressure on them, don't they?
Yes. I feel like he was just trying to put it off on the first person that they could put it off on, which was my son. They needed to pin it on somebody, and that's who they did. They pinned it on my child.
Okay. All right. And how many subpoenas went out on behalf of your son by the somebody just messaged me something in regard to this, so I'm just trying to pay attention to what's coming in. So how many subpoenas were put out by the public defender on behalf of your son?
From what I was told, there was, I think, maybe about 7 to 12 or so that he sent out.
Boy, I'm going to interrupt you right now because we have Stanley himself. Yes, Jennifer, please bring him on.
Okay,
we have your son.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, hello.
Stanley.
Hello.
Stanley,
yes, hello?
Thank you for. Hello, we can hear you. I can hear you.
I can hear you.
Okay.
Okay, listener.
Thank you,
you
for having me.
You're listening to Stanley Watson, who is in prison right now, convicted of first-degree murder with the possibility of parole. So we've got you for just a few minutes. Is that right?
Yes, just a few minutes. It might hang up in the middle of me talking, so bear with me.
Okay. First of all, share with us what you want us to know. You've got the floor.
Well, first of all, before I even speak on me, I would like to first send my condolences to the family of Austin Hatcher, because, you know, it's just not about me and my family, but it's about him and his family as well. So before I even get on me, I would like to express that. Now, when it comes to this case, I mean, there's so many things that transpired that, I mean, just having to talk about it sometimes it puts me into a place that I really don't like to go, because having to do a lot of time, and right now it's 20 years, having to do so much time for a crime that you didn't commit, you're reminded every day. You feel the pain every day, you know.
Yes. I can't know what you're going through, but I can only imagine. Mm-hmm.
Right. And so, I mean, that night, man, it's so many things that transpired that night, so many things that went a certain way that was never supposed to go. You know, I wasn't even supposed to be there at that party that night, but I ended up being there anyway. I mean, when
I've got a question.
Austin,
did you murder
yes,
Austin Hatcher? Did you murder
No,
him?
Ma'am.
Okay.
No, ma'am. If I was to see a picture of him right now, I wouldn't even know what he looked like. I didn't know the young man. I never seen the young man at all. So the next morning, when me and my friends went down to the sheriff's department, you know, I was already told from a teacher and a coach that they were looking for us. So that's where we actually got picked up at. Me and Myron and I were together, because we had just finished from going to church. So from church, we go to our friend's Alfred house, and he stayed with a teacher and a coach who were married at the time. And they told us what happened. They told us that the police was looking for us. We didn't know why, but they told us that somebody had got hurt, and basically that they wanted to ask us questions. So, of course, we waited for the person who was looking for us to come get us, and we jumped in a truck and went.
So you weren't aware,
Crow or
you weren't
like
there
that.
When the police showed up? You weren't aware when the police actually showed up?
That night after the fight had broke, at the fight, because there was the fight with Austin, that was something that we didn't know about, that I didn't know about. The fight
you
that
were not
I knew about
fight.
Is a fight that I was not part of any fight, but
okay.
I was standing over a fight, and there was the fight with Myron Wells and another young man. Myron had an altercation with a young man when we were out there, and you know, I was standing over him.
Was that
so
Austin?
As
far as you know,
as far as I know, that was not Austin.
Was it was Alonzo in an altercation?
I can't say from me saying, like, yeah, I seen him, because I didn't see that. Now, I can tell you, far as testimony go, that according to testimony, that he was involved into another fight. But as far as what I seen, I can't sit up here and say, yeah, I seen him fighting somebody.
All that matters is the truth. All that matters is the truth. Okay.
Right. So the fight that I seen is the fight with Myron Wells and another young white male. So as I'm sitting, you know, it's a big crowd, and it's dark as I don't know what, you know. The only thing that gave us light at this particular moment was that it was an older guy in a truck, probably like 50 feet away, and he hit his lights on. His lights were kind of like on dim. So that's how you can be able to see everybody. But before then, it was pitch black dark. You couldn't see anything. All you could see was shadows. That's all you could see. So in the process of this, I was out there with Myron. So, of course, I know Myron and what he was in. And so when him and the young white male started fighting, I'm standing over them. A young white female came up trying to jump in. And I told her, I was like, please, don't jump in. Don't jump in. So as I'm talking to her, somebody pushed her from over my left shoulder. So, I mean, and again, it was so dark that where when she fell back or she was pushed back, I no longer had the visual of where she was at. So as she got pushed or shoved, someone reached across to me. Now, as far as testimony go, because I got to also implement testimony as a part to what I seen. So as far as testimony go, those arms that reached across me were supposed to be Austin Hatcher, and he was supposed to have pushed Satchiko, because they say it's Satchiko, the one that pushed the young lady for being in my face.
And Satchiko Glaster, is that correct?
Yes, yeah, Satchiko Glaster.
Glaster, okay. And the one who has said that she's willing to speak up about this, okay.
Right. So they say that it was Austin who was supposed to have pushed her. And then when he pushed her, he punched me. But again, I can't testify to the fact that, oh, yeah, I know that Austin punched me. I know that I got punched, but I don't know who punched me.
All right. And
I can't say who punched me, because I'll be lying.
Was it at that time that the stabbing took place?
As far as I know, once he pushed me or punched me, it said that Alonzo attacked him.
Okay.
And say that they went to scuffling. They say that once they went to scuffling, So, remind you, after I get hit, when I got hit, I couldn't, it was already dark. Now I'm dazed. I was almost knocked out. I was knocked back for sure to where I caught myself with my, you know, on my hand. I didn't actually hit my butt, but I caught myself from falling all the way to the ground. So now I'm dazed. I'm shocked. And all I see is body. It's waves and whooshes of bodies just running past me. So
you
I'm
hit
trying
your head.
To.
Is that correct?
No. I never fell. I never fell.
Oh, okay.
I just got punched.
Okay.
You know, I got sucker punched from my right side as I was trying to turn back around.
Was the wind knocked out of you?
I can't hear you.
Was the wind knocked out of you? Is that what you're saying?
Oh,
yes.
The wind was knocked out of me. I was
dazed.
Okay. I don't know if you ever hit, so I can't. But, you know, if you ever been hit really hard, you get to seeing, like, the little bubbles and stuff. Like, you know, your vision is blurry. Your vision is blurry, so you can't really see. So I'm trying to get my senses back. You know, I'm trying to get my vision back and all that. Yes,
did
ma'am.
You want to testify on your own behalf at the trial?
Yes. Yes, I wanted to, but at the time, my public defender told me that he didn't think it was in my best interest. And I kept telling him, like, I want to testify. That was my whole thing. I wanted to testify to let people know, like, hey, I didn't do this. I didn't commit this crime. I didn't hurt this person. I don't know what he looked like. I never had a problem with him or anything.
Right.
I never had a weapon, anything.
And he believed it was in your best interest to subpoena witnesses on your behalf, but unfortunately he didn't let them know when the trial was. Is that correct?
Yes, pretty much so, because when the judge read off all the witnesses at trial, there was like a list of almost 75 to 100 people on both sides, on both the DA side and on both our side.
Well, we can see what the DA side turned up. There wasn't anybody willing or wanting to lie for him.
Right. And on my side, only people that was called was Jennifer and her brother.
Okay.
And on the DA side,
who is now your wife,
who's now my wife, and her brother at the time, her brother was there. No, her brother wasn't. Her brother was there. Her brother was actually in the car with us, with me. In the car, it was me, Simeon, Myron, Sachiko, and Brandon.
Not Alonzo.
Not Alonzo. Alonzo was not in the car with us. Alonzo was in his own car somewhere.
So there was no blood spattering. There was you had to strip of your clothes so that they could take it for evidence. Is that correct?
Yes. They had my shoes. They had my clothes. They had everything. They stripped me to bare minimum. They took pictures of me. I didn't have any scratches on my hand. I didn't have any bruises on my knuckles.
Okay. And
nothing
are you
to even.
This to the other to the others who were initially charged?
Well, that's the thing. No one else was initially charged. They were taken in held for material witnesses, which is what I was told that I was from the gate. I kept asking them, like, am I being charged? Am I being charged? They was like, no, you're just a material witness. No, you're just a material witness. So this happened. This was like a Saturday, Sunday, because it was like around. It went from like 11 to like 1 o'clock in the morning. So it was like Saturday, Sunday. So Sunday morning is when we went to the county, and they asked us questions, and they basically was saying that I did it. And then from there, we got locked up. And so I think it was like Tuesday or Wednesday is when I went up to my arraignment, and they told me that I was the one being charged with the murder.
And what was the prosecution's theory? Why you were the one being charged?
They never had one. They had absolutely no motive whatsoever.
No motive, no evidence, no witnesses seeing you with a knife. We've got Melissa. Melissa, hang in there. I just want to have I want to have Stanley on with us as long as we possibly can. Melissa, are you there?
I am here. I'm listening to Stanley's story.
Melissa Hurry, and she is an expert in conviction integrity units who's been on the show several times. Discussing the need for them. So she's on listening too. But Stanley, we want to keep hearing from you as long as we have you on with us. When the police showed up, were you there on those grounds? I have a feeling that Stanley had to hang up. Stanley, are you there?
I don't think she's on anymore.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we're just so grateful for the time
that we had with him and both Jennifer and Janet, you must have goosebumps when you hear his voice. And it was great to hear from, to be able to hear directly from him. Hopefully that can happen again. So hi, Marissa.
Hi, Tanya. How are you doing?
What do you think about what you just heard?
Well, I've been listening for a little while, and I didn't really know Stanley's story very well, so I was glad to hear some of the facts and to hear Stanley speak. And I think it's this pattern that we know that especially happens in Comanche County, because we've seen it before, haven't we?
Yes, we certainly have.
So,
yes, we have.
I mean,
now, in this case, do you feel that it is a do you feel that it's a an inexperienced public defender when he actually doesn't call on when he doesn't let the majority of his witnesses, people who testify on behalf of family, you know, other than, you know, his now wife and his brother-in-law. I mean, what is a public defender thinking or doing, in your opinion,
well,
when?
Can we keep chalking that up to inexperience, or is there something else that goes on there where public defenders, and I don't want to say all public defenders, I always say I know some very good attorneys, some very good public
sure.
defenders that represent their clients and
yes.
that are blessings. But there are also public defenders, I feel, that just follow the status quo, and that's what they're supposed to do. Because how can you have a client where you don't call a witness? How can you have a client where you don't call alibi witnesses or even let that witness testify in their own defense if they have to?
I agree with that.
So I think it's more than inexperience. I think it's, I call it the well-oiled machine that's supposed to run that way.
Right. Right. And it gets to a point where it goes without saying. Heck, you know, I've talked to witnesses that have, and I don't believe that this was Comanche County, I will disclose that to begin with, that have been in a diner, and they're there 2 days a week, or the 2 days a week, you know, pretty much every day, but a couple days a week. There's a prosecutor, and there's attorneys in there, and they're determining what's going to happen in trial that day. This is what I was told from actually more than one person, similar stories, and that in this one particular case where one of them had heard, this is regarding Tulsa County, which that is definitely on my radar. Well, I'm looping back around to Tulsa County, believe me. But one attorney, but that they would actually say, sorry for fumbling there, that it'd laugh and say, who's going to be, and forgive me, it's a Christian radio, but I'm going to say, it's not really a swear, I don't think, but I try not to be disrespectful, but the words are, you know, who's going to be our next poor bastard today, all right? And that was a quote that 'll never leave my mind. And that is because... not because somebody was poor in that case, but it's because somebody actually had money. And this was over a family court. And it was who the money, you know, it was by the time that person left that trial, they would be out of money. And,
can I say something?
Mm-hmm. Please do.
This is Janet. And because I don't understand. As a public defender, you take an oath in law to defend your client to your fullest capability, not to pretend that you're going to do your best and do whatever you can up until trial. And then the day of trial, you sit back and just say, okay, I'm going to let the DA do whatever he does. I'm not going to object to anything. And whatever the jury comes back with is okay with me. I don't understand that. You took an oath, but when you get there, and it's time for you to fight for your client's life. These people's lives are on the line. My son's life was on the line. And Don Gutteridge sit there and let the DA run all over him as if he was out there at the scene. But the way
right.
the DA was talking, you would have thought he was a witness. And not
right.
one time did Don Gutteridge object to anything he said. Not one time did he object to any of the witnesses that the DA called. Not one time did he put anybody on the stand that was out there that actually to sit up there and defend my son. Not one time did he let that happen. He never let my son get on the stand and defend himself, and nor did he try to defend him. And I don't understand how he went home and went to sleep that night knowing that he just put my son in prison for the rest of his life because he didn't defend him to his fullest. But he took an oath to do that.
Right.
And
absolutely
I
don't know how. I don't know how they sleep. But the, you know what? The prosecutor needs to put it on somebody. The judge needs to move things right along.
Exactly.
And go ahead, Marissa.
I hate to say it. I work in the state, and I see how public defenders operate. And it's not very good. Like I said, there are good ones. There are good public defenders, and I don't ever want to say put them all in the same category. But I've seen many, many. The court just wants they want the trial to be over with, or they want a case to settle. I mean, less than 5% of cases even go to trial. They're meant to resolve those cases. And the ones that they don't get penalized because they took it to trial. So it gets even harsher. And public defenders, a lot of them just need to make things easy in the court. At the end of the day, they're getting paid what they're getting paid. They're public defenders. They're state employees.
Exactly.
And I
yep.
just feel that
and
needs to change.
They
need more funding for the public defenders.
We do know that, I do know that there have been, I know of several attorneys that have been blacklisted and or they've lost their licenses for actually standing
mm-hmm.
up for the right thing. I know of one that went missing. I know of another that was poisoned. It's a pretty scary thing when you're making hundreds of phone calls and you're asking for help with a case and nobody will go up against a certain judge, a certain, you know,
mm-hmm.
where there's a certain judge, prosecutor and whatnot, and they know better. And the good thing is that, you know, they're not going to just steal your money. And the bad thing is, you know, some will take the case and they will just steal your money and sit there and just let it all unravel right in front of you when they're supposed to be actually defending. So that's it's ineffective counsel. That's
bad.
What it is. It's ineffective
really
counsel.
Bad.
But who's
the
bar
sue? For effective counsel is I don't know what. How low is that? And then you have these post-conviction cases that if things aren't brought up by your attorney at trial, then you're barred from bringing that up. But if you didn't have an attorney that represented you, how were you going to bring those issues up? You don't know the
correct.
Law. Your attorney's supposed to.
Exactly.
Right. And if there is not, I just don't understand how there can be a denial. How first of all, I mean, is the judge not doing their job when they are instructing the jury? Let's go there. Prongs are to find somebody guilty of a crime that is going to put them away for life with the possibility of parole, by which he was just recently denied commutation without any explanation. So this is very raw. This is very, very raw. Now, of course, he is not going to say that he committed a crime that he didn't commit. And he's paid 17 more years than what they supposedly offered with a plea bargain. Something I wanted to ask him is if he regretted that. And I bet you he would say no. He does not regret not taking that plea bargain. Right.
And again, that's people being penalized for fighting for their innocence because they know they're innocent. I'm on one today, Tanya, because I've been doing some research, and I always take pride in how we progress in criminal justice reform here on the East Coast, but some of the research I've been doing shows me otherwise.
What have you found?
Well, I don't want to speak on it right now because it's a matter that I'm actually working on, but I will.
Okay. And you and I.
But it's the reason why I brought it up, not to say I don't want to speak on it, but because I see there's need for reform all over the country. I mean, I know Oklahoma has some extreme cases. In Oklahoma, even me being all the way here in Connecticut, can clearly see the pattern that goes on in Oklahoma. But we need reform all around the country. We need it here too. Everything from police misconduct to prosecutorial misconduct to jurors being almost intimidated and to coming up with guilty verdicts. I mean, I've seen that in many cases. So,
mm-hmm. And jurors also being given the incorrect information. Jurors
absolutely
being, not being given evidence that should be able to be, it should have been presented. I mean, we look at the Daniel Holtzclaw case, and
absolutely.
That's, you know, a textbook example of this kind of malfeasance. You know, again, if it was an error, somebody needs to stand up, suck it up, mm-hmm. and admit that they were inhuman and made an error and hope to God somebody's life wasn't taken over. In other words, you know, we know that that they're going back to, you know, that the death penalties are going forward again. And, you know, Richard Glossop is one that is on the chopping block. And, I'm sorry, that's a horrible way to say it. But he's in line. You know, Leah, his wife, spoke at the rally as well. We're hoping to God that this is another case where I know there are attorneys working hard on that one, where he will be afforded justice after all this time. It's just the thing is, people are protecting themselves and their buddies. They wind up having things. Okay, I got you here. I got you here. I got you here. You know, suddenly everybody's got something on somebody else, and this malfeasance continues until enough of us stand up. I hope this motivates more people to speak up, speak out.
And Tanya, can I say something? Not to interrupt you. This is Jen again. I ran into one of the ladies that was on the jury, the only black lady that was on there, maybe like a year after Stanley had been sentenced. And she recognized me. And I asked her, you know, I was like, how did y'all come up with a guilty verdict? And she said they found him guilty because he didn't get on the stand and testify. Mm-hmm. And they felt like if he didn't testify to defend himself, then he had something to hide. I said, y'all found him guilty based mm-hmm. on the fact that he did not get on the stand and testify for himself, to defend himself? And she said, because the foreperson, the lady that gets up and reads the verdict, or whatever she's called, correct me because I don't know what they call it, the person that gets up and said, we found this person guilty out of the 12 jurors.
Right.
Okay. She was in the military.
And you had also brought up earlier today that because he was stone-faced.
Yes, they said that he didn't cry, and that he didn't show any kind of emotions, and mm-hmm. that he did not testify. And she said
that
this
was after he had already been in jail for 2 years. Is that correct?
Yeah, he had already been in jail for a year, and I ran into her because she worked at the phone company, at the cell phone place. And she recognized me. She was the only black lady that was on the jury. And she told me, and I asked her, I said, how did y'all come up with a guilty verdict? And she stated because he didn't testify to defend himself. And the lady that was mm-hmm. over the jury, the head lady, was an ex-military MP. So she convinced mm-hmm. every one of them in the jury room that he had to be guilty because he didn't testify. And he didn't show any emotions.
So
and that's
she was
his
able to show
job.
Up with some kind of authority.
And she said, well, we never thought he was going to get a life sentence, is what she said. Mm. She said, we thought he would get approximately 3 to 5 years, never a life sentence.
I think that part of an attorney's job is to humanize your client to the jury. And if you don't do that, you're not doing any part of your job, that should be one of the first things that you do or try to do.
Stanley had no prior violent conviction.
Oh, no.
He's not a troublemaker.
No, ma'am. There had never been any kind of altercation, none of that.
And yet, it boiled down to, were there any other public defenders for these? Oh, okay, so now somebody must have been charged, because if Alonzo had Kensu Dorsey, then Alonzo must have been charged.
Yeah, he came with an attorney. He had an attorney.
Okay.
Yeah, Kensu Dorsey.
So he had an attorney.
He was the only one, actually, that had an attorney, other than Don Gutteridge being appointed to Stanley. Alonzo Horn was the only one that had an attorney representing him.
Okay. And did the others have public defenders like Stanley did?
No. Stanley and Alonzo were the only two that had attorneys. Nobody
okay,
else had to have an attorney.
Okay. All right. So we're going to clear that up a little bit more on our next show, because from what Stanley said, it sounded like I'm just a little bit confused over if anybody was actually charged or if they were actually just being held in question.
I believe they were just being held for material witnesses. That's what I believe. That's what I was told.
And then why did Alonzo show up with an attorney? So that
I was specifically told by Don Gutteridge that Alonzo Horn was initially he was a suspect. I was told that by Don Gutteridge myself, personally.
Okay, and who is this? Is
from
it
the
Janet?
Beginning. Yes, this is Janet, this is Stanley's mother. Yes.
Okay.
Don Gutteridge told
okay.
me that himself, personally. That's not hearsay or anything. He told me this out of his mouth, that Alonzo Horn was the main suspect first.
Okay. So,
is this Tanya?
Yes, this is Tanya right here.
Yeah, Tanya, I didn't know if you could hear me. It's Cheryl Burns. I've been listening.
Oh, hi, Cheryl.
Oakland Project. I just wanted to reiterate that to Stanley's mother and his wife that we will not give up on that case.
And I will not either. I'm not giving up. Thank you, and I appreciate you helping us fight.
And we will leave no stone unturned, and we're really deep into the investigation right now. So that's about all I can say is as far as his case
right.
goes, you know, without revealing additional information. But just know that, I mean, we fight right along with everyone else. We believe in his innocence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's high on our priority, and we're really working hard on it. And when our investigator, when our student comes and becomes an attorney, she's very committed to this case, so she will.
Okay. Cheryl, I'm going to have to cut you off because I've got to close down, but I will ask you to reappear, to reappear next Tuesday. All right. If you feel that there's something more that you can say and add to this, and we'll be in touch otherwise. This
sure.
is a series.
Thank you, Cheryl.
I want to thank you so much, Cheryl. That's great news to have. It's time to close down. Quickly have to close it down. Thank you very much,
thank
Stephen
you, everybody.
Burke, 89.9 KLOE. Thank you, Marty Oakley. Jennifer, thank you so much. Janet, thank you so much.
Please
tune back in next Tuesday. And we'll continue this. I didn't have enough time to have for a better closing. I'm Tanya Hathaway, your host of Tanya Talks, where your voice is heard and your story is told. God bless. Good night.
Thank you.
And free Stanley.